Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 34 of the Peak of Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emelson, and as always, I am joined by Anomaly.
Hey.
And today, we're going to take a look back at BFA as a whole to kind of give some context for what we're hoping for in the Shadowlands. So we're going to spend some time looking at how, like, what systems BFA brought with it, how the launch was, how each of the patches was, and kind of wrap up our thoughts on the expansion as a whole. But before we do that, we had some things happen this week. I actually forgot to add some of this stuff to the show notes, but we did have some stuff happen this week.
To be fair, I am still down a rabbit hole in Factorio. I have no idea what happened.
So I think the first big thing that happened this week was we got a major post from Ian Hazakostas, aka Watcher, about the state of Shadowlands development. And there's a bunch of stuff in there, but most importantly, he more or less stated outright that they would not be pulling the ripcord. For those that aren't familiar with it, pulling the ripcord is something like when he did an interview with Preach, he commented that if covenants really weren't working, they had the option to pull the ripcord, so to speak, and just like let you swap whatever you wanted whenever. And so that kind of gave the community a rallying cry as the covenants, I don't think I've spoken to a single person that is like, yeah, the covenants are going to work out. Yeah. So we kind of have had this rallying cry of like, pull the ripcord, and people have been posting about it on Reddit, and people have been using it as a hashtag on Twitter. And we got basically Watchers saying this week that they are not going to pull the ripcord.
Yeah, I think this set, like, I'm getting very, like, you think you do, but you don't type vibes from this post. Because I don't know if they, like, there's always the idea that when you're a creator of something, like, you think you have the best intentions in mind, and, like, you think you know how things are going to play out and all that type of stuff. But at a certain point, you know, you kind of have to start to listen to the people who play whatever you're building, right, or kind of are involved in that, and listen to their feedback. And I don't know if it's that inside of Blizzard, it's sort of like an echo chamber, right? Where somebody comes with an idea and it's like, oh yeah, it's a great idea, you know? And then everybody's like, oh yeah, I'd love to do this because I play this game too and I'm a Blizzard employee. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that's the sort of thing coming out of this, but I mean, look, Ian said flat out, like, the Kieran Paladin versus Venthyr Paladin argument is like the only difference is one button. Like, it's not a whole subclass. Like, it's not like soul binds and conduits give you additional things and randomly change your playstyle. Like they built it. And the way I read it was like, oh yeah, if you pick Kieran, like the three or four options, sorry, you have are like your subclasses, right? Like you could be a Venthyr Holy Paladin. You know, that's like your thing. And the problem is that like the covenants don't change your gameplay enough to warrant it being a subclass. Like you still do everything you do as a, you know, I guess I should say monk because we're on a monk podcast, but I mean, you do everything you do as like a Windwalker monk, but now you get Bone Dust Brew. You know what I mean? Like it's, or you get a thing that is like Seth, but not like Seth, you know, like if you pick Met there. So yeah.
And someone, you know, parroting, I saw someone make this comment about, you know, if these were subclasses, then maybe it would be a little bit different, but the covenants only are going to last this expansion. We have no reason to believe that they are going to last beyond, you know, once 10.0 hits, we fully expect them to go away, just like artifacts, just like Azerite, just like essences, and just like corruption. This is a temporary system. No one is tying their characters to a temporary system and saying, this is what my character is. My character is never going to be a Venthyr monk. It is going to be a monk that for the purposes of this expansion is using the Venthyr Covenant. That is the farthest it can ever go because that is the longest that system will ever last. And unless that changes, which honestly, I kind of hope it doesn't, this can never fill the role of subclasses.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is just another one of those. And here's where I end up with, I'll explain my point. I end up in a little bit of a tough, my mind is in a tough situation. So if we think back to like original WoW, even Burning Crusade for that matter. And I'd say, I mean, like even Wrath a little bit, but they got better, is that in those first two expansions, there wasn't really a unifying story, right? And I think this all kind of builds back on that, is like they're building into expansions now things that are just an expansion, right? Like you just sit inside of an expansion, everything you do in that expansion is very focused on that. It's very similar to like the seasonal mentalities you see in a lot of other games like Battle Royales, and you know, Destiny 2 is another good example of that. But they're building it across an expansion that now lasts 2 years. So I enjoy the tight story. I enjoy that the narrative is there, that if you care about that stuff, you can flow that single sort of thread from the start of the expansion to the end of it, right? They have the big boss in mind at the end and everything like that. But at the same time, I think they build systems around that thread that don't allow them to change or shift. And I think we'll talk about that a little bit today. But like, yeah. I think it's a little bit too rigid when they settle on these are the expansion systems and we build everything around these systems, because if that system is not good or it fails, the entire expansion feels like ass, like it feels terrible. Which is, I think, in BFA, that's Azerite. It's literally we're going through the Azerite situation one more time. The only difference here is that we had about 6 months of giving feedback that the system's terrible for them not to listen to it. With Azerite, we had like what, a month and a half? So I mean, they gave us more time to tell them it's terrible. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's just the echo chamber Blizzard that they think players are stupid, because I mean, there was that Celestion tweet, which I mean, I know it doesn't work on WoW anymore, but that sort of, did you see this, by the way?
I don't remember. I don't think I did.
So I forget who made the tweet. It might have been like Max or JB or something.
Oh, JW. About the Covenant stuff?
Yeah, about Covenant, yeah. Working? Oh, no, not about the condo. It's not working. That was Zorbix, which I'll give Zorbix the benefit of the doubt. Like, WoW's a big game. Like, he might not know every bug that's out there, and he's not. Like, his job is to test
that's
it.
Fair.
So
that's fair.
But the Celestion stuff was, like, somebody mentioned something about, like, Covenants being bad or whatever. Or Conduits, what is it? Something, one of the, it, like, being only, or only being able to change something, like, once a week, I think, was the issue, like, with Soulbinds. And Celestion was like, oh, what's the issue? Like, and, like, they explained in a tweet, and he responded with like, oh, another case of players like being able to point out problems but not solutions. And like the idea, and like you hear that and you're like, well, like whenever we as players, like a lot of the times when I think of like feedback, and when I've watched people or read of people saying like this is good feedback, it's always been like, tell me how this feels, or tell me how this feels bad, don't give me a solution as a designer, because like I have an idea of what this should be, and if it's not playing out that way, I still want that idea of what it should be to hit. And I would be able to make changes to get there, right? Not tear down what I built and build something brand new next to it. Like, that's not my goal. And like, that's, I mean, there's like a bunch of other tweets below. Like, they respond back and forth, and like, everybody gets snarky about it. But like, that was a tweet that was like, I was like, damn, like, the Blizzard just not, like, what do they want from us as players? Like, first of all, they don't want us to give them solutions, but they want us to give them feedback. And then if we want to give them feedback, it has to be like short and concise, because they can't read it. But if it's short and concise, then we can't give them like the full idea of what our feedback is, and they won't read it anyway. Like, it's, they're all over the place in how they want players to communicate with them. And they're really bad at like then turning that communication into some sort of action. Like, or at least a response to what they're going to do as an action, right?
And kind of on that note, at some point I would actually like to do like a full podcast, or maybe not full podcast, but at least part of a podcast about Blizzard's poor communication on the World of Warcraft team, because it comes up especially when you look at Monk stuff, and there's like, we got the post that said we were going to get changes next week, and then we got like some bug fixes, and they were bug fixes that everybody expected to eventually happen as part of the beta, and we didn't actually get any class changes as part of it. And then this week we got major changes to Brewmaster, which we'll get to, but no real explanation for what their goal was or why they were making the changes, along with changes to other tanks like Vengeance Demon Hunter got some very confusing nerfs, and we don't know why. We don't know why they made those changes. But I would like to, there's been a bunch of people as well this week talking, if you look at the subreddit especially, about Mark Rosewater's GDC talk a few years ago. Mark Rosewater is the lead designer of Magic the Gathering, which is another one of those kind of mainstay games that is very popular. And as a like pretty enfranchised Magic player, they definitely have their own problems. People will be bitching about 2019 Magic for a long time. But one of them is not communication. They do communication very, very well. And that is something that I think it's worth contrasting, because I don't think a lot of WoW players kind of have reasonable expectations for what communication should look like. And while I wouldn't necessarily say that I expect the WoW devs to maintain the same level of communication that the Magic the Gathering devs do, because they do it, again, extremely well, but there's a very large gap between their communication and the WoW team's communication, and they can close that gap without having to go all the way to that same level of extremely good communication.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, like, from a WoW perspective, maybe just Blizzard in general, right, the communication just, it's not consistent. I think it was, in my mind, it was probably the most consistent, or the, I mean, maybe this is as a player, right, looking in, like, it was best when Ghostcrawler, you know, really sort of led the game at that, like, MOP style, or, you know, MOP, I guess, time frame, right? I think there they did sort of like their posts about like, here's the direction we're taking classes and here's where we think this class will end up. And yeah, I mean, I get it that like communicating with players, particularly across like a beta phase or an alpha phase, where there's so many systems now, everything's super intertwined, and you have teams that are not even internally at Blizzard, probably not talking to each other on a regular basis, right? Making decisions, that having that sort of consistent communication point is difficult. But I mean, yeah, like you, I think we've seen it this week, and even with Ian's sort of large post and some of the ancillary stuff around the edges of maybe not people who are working on WoW, but who have worked on WoW in the past and are, you know, our Blizzard, you know, employees, right? That it's just, it's tough to have faith, or it's not, maybe not faith, but it's tough to go on and continue to sort of drive and give feedback when it falls on deaf ears. I don't want to sound like, hey, like we give feedback and they don't do anything and blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, I don't think there's an expectation that when you give feedback, you know, a change is immediate, or, you know, what you suggest or say should be changed. But some feedback on, like, in general, we've seen a lot of, you know, we've seen a lot of posts on pulling the ripcord. Like, we've seen a lot of posts on this class or the way that this group of, you know, or this group of roles are playing, right? Yeah, and like, give some feedback on that. Just let us know. And especially this late in like a development cycle, right? Like, you're no longer just like throwing things at the wall and seeing if it sticks, which I could imagine would be like an early alpha, early beta type mentality, right? Which is like, hey, make some changes, see how this plays out. Oh, it sucks. All right, we'll pull it back, right? But dude, we're 2 weeks from, at this point, roughly 2 weeks from a pre-patch and 6 weeks to an expansion. Like, they gotta lock things in and fix it, like make sure it works, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's doubly frustrating when, like, we've given feedback on like fairly game-breaking bugs with monks, the various specs during the BFA life cycle, not even talking about alpha or beta, that have gotten fixed almost immediately. So like, we know they see our feedback. We know that they have an eye on things. You know, when Babs wrote the post, or what, I don't remember if it was Babs, whoever wrote the post about canceling SEF to get triple damage on your Whirling Dragon Punch, that got fixed in the next patch, the next hotfix, the next Tuesday, Wednesday. It was fixed.
Yeah.
We know they're looking at this stuff. And to have so much of our feedback about, like, here's the problems that we see with the class, with the spec, with the game, and just get radio silence in response, it's not great. And then on top of that, like, he in his post, Watcher basically asked us to trust that they could tune it, and
No one.
I don't know if they've played. I don't know if they've looked at like the game. I don't know if they looked at like how corruption launched. They nerfed Echoing Void by 50%. Like,
it's not even that they can eventually get it right. They eventually get it right like 12 months later, where it's like it's already not like you've already re-rolled, you already changed what you need to do right to make it work. You've already accepted that you're either going to suck or you're going to be overpowered. It's just, to be fair, that tuning thing, I'm fine if they get it wrong. Like, I'm perfectly okay if you're like, yeah, dude, we screwed this up. But make it quick across the board. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think we're going a little long on this topic, but I think like they are very quick to, I think, to be fair, I'm gonna be so cynical of this. They're very quick to change things on classes that don't have a huge number of people that play them. However, they're very slow to change things on their more popular classes. Like Glimmer as a thing lasted, you know, way like just as bad as Rising, maybe not as bad as Rising Mist was, but in a similar vein, right? And from a healing perspective, Glimmer lasted an entire cycle without seeing anything touch it, right? Similarly, yeah, like, yeah. I'm assuming like tank wise, you've seen certain things where like certain tanks are just wildly out of tune, but because they're played more than, I don't know, this is a bad topic for me. I feel like monks get shafted for no other reason than like somebody at Blizzard, whatever developer runs class balance, like lost their raid spot to some monk spec, and it's just like anytime something comes up, he's just like, nope, veto, demon hunters, 15% more damage, holy paladins, yeah, I mean, they need like another cooldown.
I think it's a little bit of like, there's this calculus of like, okay, how severe is the problem? How simple is the problem? And like when those two things, when it's a simple problem that's also severe, then they can make a fix. Or when it's a severe problem, even if it's complex, they can take emergency action that might have repercussions, but the problem is severe enough to force their hand. And I think Rising Mist fits in that latter category, where it was like, for most players, it wasn't that severe, especially prior to the corruption vendor, because almost no one could feel the kind of corruption that you needed to make it really sing.
Yeah.
But then you saw the top end logs of people like solo healing Mythic Nazoth, and
so good.
That's I would say pretty severe.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Rising Mist, it's a bad example because yeah, it needed.
But at the same time, like we've got Brewmasters that have been the de facto best tank probably since Nighthold, definitely since Tomb of Sargeras when Mark of Ursul got removed, and they're looking very. We're looking very good going into Castle Nathria, and it all comes down to this: like, Stagger is extremely good, and no other tank has something even remotely comparable. And it's the entire spec is built on it. So it's very complex to remove that. And they really missed their window to do so with the move from BFA into Shadowlands.
Yeah.
But now we're kind of in the situation where it's clearly a problem. It probably isn't going to be all that severe. Like, just because Brewmaster is the best doesn't mean the rest are unplayable. It just means you won't see them at the very top end guilds. But it's also complex to deal with, so they probably aren't.
That's fair. All right, maybe enough of ranting and raving about communication and monks getting shit.
There is one other thing that I would like to get to that happened this week, and that is the Brewmaster monk changes. I don't know if there were any changes to Mistweaver or Windwalker.
We can talk about them.
Okay. You want to hit the Mistweaver ones first?
Yeah, I mean, it's as simple. They nerfed our Celestials. One pretty, like, Invoke GG got a pretty, I wouldn't say sizable nerf, but a slight nerf. But they nerf Yulon without, it still doesn't function. Like, you can't test it, but they nerfed it. So I don't know why. I mean, that's another issue that I have with Blizzard is that they like change tunings on things without the actual thing working. So we don't actually know if it was good. I mean, Yulon was going to be a solid cooldown. I think you hit it because it's baseline, right? But yeah, we just got some, I mean, we got a tuning pass on our Celestials, and then they started to bug fix some of our Covenant abilities. So like our Venthyr monks now actually cast Enveloping Mist, seem to be pretty good potentially. But yeah, it's we just got our, hey, we might be good for our 6 days, and then they nerfed everything.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern in the tank community right now that they were making nerfs based on very bugged classes, and specifically the people that were running. So up until this reset, there was gear scaling in place on the max level beta. So people were, instead of using actual realistic gear, going and getting Wrath, Wad, BC, even gear that had a bunch of sockets in it, and having that gear scaled up. So they had like triple or quadruple the number of sockets that anyone could actually have in Shadowlands, and getting that all scaled up and being massively overpowered and doing high level keys on things. And low key, we think that's why Vengeance Demon Hunter got nerfed, because they were one of the big beneficiaries of the massive stat inflation that came with that. But there's also things like Brewmasters have a conduit that was pretty badly bugged that basically made all heavy stagger damage heal you instead of damaging you. And obviously that's insane. Like, if you look at most fights, your heavy stagger damage is anywhere from 60 to 80% of the stagger damage you take. If you just take all of that and you make it heal you instead, it's obviously busted. It's going to make, it would make Brewmasters absolutely insane. So nerfing in light of that doesn't make any sense, because they fixed the conduit, but they also this week, they increased the cooldown of Purifying Brew by 25% from 15 seconds to 20 seconds, which is, in fairness, a change we had been asking for, because it makes you more deliberate about when you use Purifying Brew and keeps Purifying Brew from like eating its own value too much. Then they also doubled the cooldown of Celestial Brew and cut the healing of Celestial Brew by 40%.
What is it now, like a 60-second cooldown then?
60-second cooldown. The actual numbers work out to the total amount of healing you can expect from Celestial Brew over the course of a fight was reduced by 70%.
Jesus.
And then lastly, they nerfed Stagger by about 3%. They reduced the amount that you stagger by about 3%. It works out to a little bit different because of what we really care about is the amount of damage we take to face, not the amount of damage that's staggered. So it works out a little bit differently, but it's a small nerf to stagger. It's another one that a lot of people were like, this would be good as long as Celestial Brew stays like it is. Pairing it with a really large Celestial Brew nerf is very concerning, but the way things are looking on beta right now, Brewmaster is still one of the stronger tanks. So I would not expect Brewmaster to be bad going into Castle Nathria. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if we were the unfortunate recipients of some week zero nerfs during the raid.
I mean, I guess you were talking about like Celestial Brew. Celestial Brew seemed strong, right?
Maybe. I mean, Celestial Brew was really overtuned, very, very much overtuned. But there are some knock-on effects from them increasing the cooldown. Like, we have a conduit that increases healing received while you have Celestial Brew's shield active. And I was already like super low on that conduit because it's kind of win more. If you have Celestial Brew up, you probably don't need more healing, that kind of thing. Well, by doubling the cooldown, they basically halved the effective uptime of that conduit, and you should never use that conduit now. It's just dead. If you get it, you can just vendor it. It's bad. And so there's that kind of knock-on effects from these other parts of the system that they've designed that just don't work anymore.
Nice.
But on the upside, increasing the Purifying Brew cooldown does mean that the conduits that benefit from us being in heavy stagger get better. Coincidentally, also makes High Tolerance, the talent that we've been using all expansion, better. So we're probably using that in Shadowlands as well. So there's... it's not been great.
I thought we had a rough week, but I mean, we just got our typical nerfs and we're actually starting to see some bug fisses. So,
in fairness, we had a rough week and are still probably the best tank.
Yeah, no, it's not the same thing. It's like not even close, so...
All right, but we've been talking about this for a long time. You want to jump into the BFA kind of launch? What happened going into BFA?
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea here is we'll do a quick overview of each of the three, or I guess four, major patches. So like 8.0, 8.1, 8.2, 8.3. Sort of touch on, I think, some of the high-level new systems that are there that were put in place. Kind of get our feelings, get how we thought they worked out. None of this is really going to be, I think, like, hey, this was like 12% better than the other thing. It'll just be like kind of how we felt, what we thought about it. So
yeah, yeah, we'll start a lot with of feely crafting and a lot of like high-level stuff.
Yeah, like, hey, I thought this was fun, or hey, this was terrible, which I think, hey, this is terrible is going to be sort of the theme of tonight. So I think first up, so we had Legion launch, or sorry, we had BFA launch. Coming out of Legion, I think the big thing was we really lost all of our artifacts and a lot of what came with that. I will tell you, for Mistweaver, we didn't care. Our artifacts was like, it just didn't affect our gameplay at all.
Like, Brewmasters were actually super, super worried because the class didn't function without the artifact. It was all built around Brew CDR, and all of your Brew CDR basically, like, or so there was this gap between the amount you got baseline from your class and the amount that you needed to be functional, and that gap was covered by the artifact. And so losing the artifact made us really concerned that we were just going to be non-functional in BFA. And it took them, like, we didn't actually get the artifact effects baked into the class until like 3/4 of the way through beta.
Jesus. Yeah, I don't, to be fair, I don't remember, like, I know a lot, like, from a Mistweaver perspective, none of our artifact abilities were that big in terms of, like, things we cared about. So losing it didn't really change the way we played. We got a couple of, like, our legendary effects baked into our Azerite, which we can talk about. But yeah, for the most part, like, we weren't too concerned, I'd say, with losing it. We were hopelessly optimistic that maybe they'd make us better, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, so then after, I mean, so that was Legion. We went into BFA. This was the first global launch, right? Did you do it for Legion?
Yep. Legion was a staggered launch, the same way that they normally launch raid tiers, where every region gets it, you know, kind of a day later, basically.
Right. Yeah. So to be fair, I thought that was really cool. I was a huge fan of them doing that. So
I think especially, like, the reason they don't do it for raids is because it incentivizes the high end raiders to be up at ridiculous hours. Like, no matter what hour you set it to, there is a region where it is awful. You set it for something good in North America and Europe, and it's awful for Asia Pacific. You said it's something that's good for APAC and Europe, and it's awful for North America. Like, there's no good option. But for just launching an expansion, like, there's no, because of how they time gate the raid release, you know, you've got 2 or 3 weeks at least before the raid comes out. There's plenty of time to get your character up, get everything done. So it's not a big deal if you lose the 6 hours between the expansion launch and you waking up at a reasonable hour.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they thought, I think, a couple things they didn't get the resets right for, but, like, yep. But I mean, other than that, I think, I mean, it went really well. Like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed being able to log in. I think it launched on the East Coast at like 8, I think, in the evening. So it was like not a terrible time, get a bunch of leveling done. So
yeah, I this is the first expansion that I leveled something besides my Hunter first. I played WoW for a very long time, pretty casually, and my Hunter was my main, and had a lot of fun playing that, but this was my first expansion being part of a cutting edge guild when the expansion launched. So I was like, you know, with artifact power and islands and all this weekly stuff that I got to get done, I should probably make sure that I do my monk first so that I can make sure I'm caught up on everything. I did my Hunter second instead of an actually useful alt, but I was different.
That's interesting. Yeah, I did my monk first, as always. I just went hard on all the fun new systems we had for him. So yeah, I think leveling was interesting. It was separate continents, right? And you kind of had your, every so often you kind of go to one of the other zones, the other side, establish a little outpost, and then kind of come back and continue leveling. So I mean, leveling is leveling. I don't remember any of the story. I don't remember any of the quests. I do remember the one though in Drusvar, if you were Horde and you got to ride around on that little trike thing.
Yeah.
Which is a little fun. That's what an intro one. But yeah, overall, I mean, typical leveling experience. I thought it was nice that they split us. I didn't really see any Alliance or, you know, I probably didn't see any Horde either. If you were leveling Alliance for the majority of it. So getting to 120 was pretty easy.
What was your favorite zone? Like, I know you said you didn't really remember the story, but what was your favorite zone kind of on expansion lunch?
To be fair, it would have been, what's the one on Cold Tirith, the one to the north?
Stormsong Valley?
Yeah, Stormsong Valley, yeah. It's probably my favorite.
That's fair. I actually at some point need to level through BFA stuff as Alliance, but I'm probably going to wait to do that until Shadowlands release. Because I don't have a high enough level Alliance character.
Yeah. What was your favorite zone?
I would say Voldoon. I'm a real big sucker for desert zones. Teneris is great. Desolus, before it got turned all green and everything, was great. It's still fine now, but it's not as good. So, like, it's very on brand.
That's fair. Yeah, it's super. I think all the Horde zones, like, so I personally not a fan of desert zones. I think they sort of get sort of flat, not exciting. Whatever. The Voldoon, or not Voldoon, what's the other? Nazmir is super, like, swampy. I'm not a fan, particularly when leveling, when there are large things in the middle of something that require you to go around them. And I feel like
Uldir in the middle of the zone definitely qualifies for that.
Yeah, like Uldir, and then the same thing in Zul'Azar with, like, the temple. And, like, you have to take those dumb canoe boats around the outside, do a big old circle. Leveling. Anyway.
Maybe we're skipping ahead a little bit here, but speaking of Uldir, that was our launch raid. What do you think of it?
Not going into too much detail. Yeah, no, I thought it was a solid first raid too, to be honest with you. I think there was some interesting fights they did some new stuff with, like, you know, the elevators with Talik as the first boss, I think was cool.
Yeah, yeah.
The Mother, I particularly enjoyed Mother as a fight. I know it was simple, but the idea of, like, moving through rooms, and, like, at least in the beginning, right, you only had so many rooms to get through before, you know, you died, essentially, to let the soft enrage, I guess, so.
Yeah. Mother is definitely, like, one of those, it's, like, it's simple, but it's effective. And, yeah. That one was fun.
Yeah, and then the only other one that really stood out was, like, Vectis being a fucking nightmare for me, dude.
Vectis was one of those ones that, like, until there was that weak aura that came out that did everything, all the thinking for you, it was a nightmare. And then once the weak aura came out, you just kind of autopiloted it. And as long as people stood in the swirlies during the intermission phase, it was basically easy if your healers could keep up with the healing requirement.
Yeah, so imagine being a healer on that fight and during the intermission having to remember your number. So remember when you need to take a debuff on someone who is also running away to soak a swirly while you soak your own swirly and dodge. Didn't they? There was, like, a charging ad you had to dodge too,
yes,
right?
Yes, there was a charging ad, yeah.
Yeah, like, imagine doing all that while also looking at raid frames, healing people so they didn't die. Like, that fight is still one of the most stressful fights to heal for me. Like, I wake up with, like, nightmares of being like Vectis, like, gotta dodge, gotta get a swirly. Somebody's dying. I'm a close to debuff. So yeah.
I wanna call out Fetid Devourer for being probably the most poorly tuned boss they have released in a long time. That one on beta was undertuned and people were like, oh, this is gonna be really easy. And then they got to it on Mythic on release, and it completely shit on everyone. The world first guilds were not streaming at that point in time, but I know we heard secondhand that people were trying one tank strats, one tank, zero melee in order to hit the DPS checks.
Yeah.
And people were reportedly somewhat close to it with that, but then Blizzard actually nerfed it and it became way more reasonable and they were able to run a more realistic raid comp to kill it.
Well, that and, like, the pustule spawns were random still at that point, right? So you could get, like, you had no control over where the big ones or little ones spawned. So you couldn't even, like, split the room effectively.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was that was an interesting one. And then what was left? Like, I mean, Zul was like a 3 minute just heart attack, like, from a healing perspective. It's like, it's literally, it's like the first 30 seconds are like, ah, whatever. And then like, it just ramps up into like something ridiculous where like everyone's dying all the times.
That was one of the ones that was kind of broken by a specific interaction. Like, so we had sub rogues and they had a specific talent in specific Azurite traits, I think, that basically meant that what the sub rogues would do is they would press Shuriken Storm and then whatever their combo point finisher was, and they would do that for 3 minutes, and that was all they did, and they would do more damage than anyone else, basically regardless of what gear they had on. I know I had friends that in their guild, they didn't have enough rogues. They went to trade chat and grabbed a random rogue that was on their realm, and they said, go put these traits on, go put these talents on, come in here, and you press these two buttons back and forth until the boss is dead. And they were like number 4 or number 5 on overall damage. Or sorry, on boss damage.
That's hilarious. And yeah.
Yeah, it was a little bit... That was... When they neutered Subrogue, the fight became a little bit more interesting, but I don't think that fight was ever really fun.
Yeah. And then you had what? Mithrax, which... I think Mithrax was probably interesting once you got to Mythic, right? And you had to like manage some stacks of things. But I don't really think it was ever that difficult. It just had a very strict positioning requirement, which like screwed over melee again.
And then they fixed it for melee and it screwed over ranged instead.
Yeah, that was it was great being a monk after they fixed it, because I could do standard melee.
Honestly, it was really annoying as a tank. Like, if you weren't in a top-end guild that could field, like, 2 melee or whatever, being a tank just meant that you had to hope that nobody edged too close while the orbs went out. Because I definitely got mind controls. And, like, mind controlled you or pacified you or whatever when an orb landed on you.
Yeah.
And if a melee character just got too close to you and it spawned on them, even though it couldn't spawn on tanks, it could overlap with you and just instantly wipe the raid because the tank got MC'd.
Yeah, that's terrible. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was a rough one.
That was also the first notable instance of a boss auto-attacking during a major ability cast. Specifically, the tank buster cast that Mithrax has is a big magic nuke. But he could auto-attack during it, which wasn't dangerous for monks or warriors, but it was dangerous for paladins and some other specs. And so that's the kind of thing that really caught people off guard, because like normally you cannot auto-attack while you are casting. But the boss was able to, so you could get wombo comboed by big auto-attack during the tank buster, and there's not a whole lot you can do about that other than hope it doesn't happen or press too many cooldowns for each tank buster and guard against it. It was really kind of a shitty situation.
I didn't realize that. I thought you were going to talk about the clever positioning for the eyes in intermission.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to get into that. That was a whole other mess.
I thought that was cool, but yeah.
It was cool, but it definitely broke the fight.
That's for sure. All right. Then I guess final boss, Gahoon, everyone's favorite.
I actually thought that fight was really cool after you got through the first phase.
First phase was, so let me remember, first phase was like just, you had some mobs that were spawning like around, like stationary, I think, right? And then like you had to run a couple orbs like by yourself, basically.
Yeah, and then the beam came down, cleared everything up, and then Gahoon himself came out. And on Mythic, you had to run more orbs to get a second beam spawn, and then you had to do a big DPS burn during the beam to push him low enough that you could kill him and execute.
Right.
On Heroic, there was only one beam, but phase one was a snooze fest, you're right. But after that, like, it was a pretty cool fight. Definitely some frustrating points with like the mind controls being really a pain in the ass and the orbs being surprisingly obnoxious. An alarming number of people could not throw orbs at people's feet.
Yeah. Oh, you know, the other thing that I thought that actually was bad was there was like a soak mechanic, right? Where you had to just stand near something to soak it.
The mind controls.
So when you do the one thing where one person would kill the ad, right? I think it was, and one person would have a circle around them, and you have to clear debuffs.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And, like, you had to do it at a specific timing, and it could overlap with those things spawning, so you had to have certain people close enough. Yeah. That was, yeah, that was, I don't know if I like that, that sort of timing issue.
That was really obnoxious.
Yeah.
It got a lot better, again, once they nerfed it, and I hate that there's this pattern of, like, once they nerfed the bot, it's actually, boss, it's actually, like, fun and doable. But that was when they nerfed the number of people you needed to soak each, like, pustule that spawned. And that made it a lot more reasonable because you could actually at that point, like, alternate. And have some people that wouldn't go stand in the thing to clear their sacks, they would go soak the mind control things instead. I progressed the boss with two guilds, and one of them we progressed most of it before that nerf, and the other one we progressed it entirely after that nerf, and it was a night and day difference.
Yeah, and that, that fight too, this, the personal responsibility on the runners, like, definitely, I think, attributed some of the frustration I had, where, like, you get to, like, the last set of runners, and you're just like, just don't screw up, we kill the boss. Just literally, you throw it, you run, you're easy, we win, and then they screw it up, and you're like, that was, like, 12 minutes. Maybe it wasn't that long, but, like, a very long, like, deep into the attempts, like, wipes to, like, simple mechanics like that is just rough. Like, we, I know that what ended up, we ended up doing was we ended up swapping runners, so like the people the phase one runners swapped to be the last runners because they had all the practice on it, and it was fine, like, we were fine
we actually,
in the first phase
we did it, we had, like, we laid out who was running which set, and then we said, okay, third set, until we actually start reaching the third set, you're running first. Like, once you get enough practice, then you guys can move to the third set, and we'll have the first set start practicing. We did something similar this tier with Zanesh, where, like, the, I think it's the first and third sets are the same but mirrored, but they can naturally be mirrored because of how, like, you can get the near spawn or the far spawn of the portal that the ball comes from on Zanesh.
Gotcha.
So we started off with the third set practicing on the first group set, and then switched it once they, you know, learned their positions.
Yeah, so I mean, that was, I guess that was Cahoon. To be fair, pretty, I mean, it was cool that we killed him. Was not that hyped to kill him, though. But I think it was a solid first raid. Nothing too exciting.
Yep, I agree. But we got some other stuff that happened in 8.0. One of them, I think this is one of the big positive changes for WoW, was the removal of the distinction between PvP and PvE servers. Instead, when you're in the game, you can go to your capital city and you can toggle war mode to pick whether you want to be in PvP mode right now or not. And that was, so most raiding guilds historically have been on PvP realms for just, like, for historical reasons, where they formed initially, and that's where the people were. And that meant that if you're a Care Bear like me and you don't want to deal with world PvP while you're getting your dailies done, you were just kind of SOL, and you had to deal with getting ganked while you were grinding AP or rep or dailies or whatever. But the change to war mode, it came with, like, you got a rep bonus and an AP bonus and an XP bonus for being in war mode, ostensibly to, like, offset the downside of getting ganked. But in practice, it was, like, hugely variable. Sometimes you would get lucky and get sharded into a realm that was, like, all your faction and just get, you know, 10% more of everything for free. And then other times you get sharded into one where you were the only one in your faction, or at least that's what it felt like, and just, like, get absolutely nothing done.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I had a, it was very polarizing, and it was either... It was either you went in and everybody was cool, no one was attacking anybody, even if you saw somebody from the opposing faction, you know, it was kind of just chill, do your dailies, get out. And then other times it was literally like a bloodbath. It was just anywhere you went, it's like everyone was killing everybody, just couldn't get anything done. But I mean, I enjoyed it. I still spent the majority of my time in war mode, at least on my monk, just because I like the 10% more things. But I think this was a solid change to sort of start to consolidate, like, the PvP and PvE rule sets, because it's an interesting way to do it, I think, in that it incentivizes sort of that PvP aspect, but you do get the ability to slow yourself down if you sort of engage in it. So I don't know, it's like a risk reward. I actually like it. I would say that I don't like that you have to go all the way back to Orgrimmar to turn it on, but I understand why. So it doesn't let people like to switch flags like in zone.
So I definitely think they could have expanded that to include like Zul'Dazar and other like faction capitals. You know, it doesn't feel like it needs to be Orgrimmar and Stormwind. It could be Orgrimmar and Undercity, RIP Undercity, but Orgrimmar and Undercity and Thunderbluff and Zul'Dazar and Dalaran, like that feels like it could have been okay. It would have been a lot easier, a lot less friction around, you know, having war mode turned on and off than it actually ended up being by having to go all the way back to Orgrimmar to turn it on.
Yeah. No, I mean, overall, I like this. I like this change.
But then I think.
Can I talk about these next two? I just want to talk about
the next two. Go for it.
So next up, I also was going to say, I'm actually going to skip the next one and go to the following. We had Warfronts launch. They were supposed to be huge RTS battles inside of World of Warcraft with your faction. You know, it was stupid and dumb. There's literally no way to lose these things. It was a effort. It was like a, not an effort, but it was a trial of time. As long as you could spend 20 minutes not going AFK in one of these things, you got loot at the end. This fell on its face. I'll be completely honest with you. Not exciting, not interesting. Honestly, there was a lot of potential if you could lose, but because you could not lose, it just was not fun. Even the heroic ones
were super hard to lose. Yeah. And that's, yeah. I think this is like the LFR school of design where like they're too afraid of letting people lose.
Yeah.
And when there's no stakes, when you can't lose, when it doesn't matter what you do, it's boring.
Yeah,
it's
so
not fun.
I found spots that you could sit in the map and be AFK, but not show on the map so people didn't know you were AFK. So you could like hide, like somebody pulled up the map of like Darkshore. You used to be able to hide at the very far north. And like still be in it, still get credit, but be AFK for like 20 minutes. So I used to do that and then do some work and like hit space for every once in a while. So I didn't go actually AFK out of the game. I'm a terrible, terrible player.
I just stopped doing Warfronts. Like I did it the one time for the initial, you know, what is this? Mm-hmm. And I probably did it once or twice after that for the AP reward, but no, I didn't participate really ever. Yeah.
That's fair. And then we also had Islands, which...
Oh, boy.
Woo-hoo. I mean, look, Islands as a system, as they were touted, were like these randomly generated, interesting sort of drop-in, drop-out scenarios that provided some rewards, right? The problem is that the reward they provided was the best way to get that reward, and that reward was Azerite power. So, like, I think... Like Islands as a specific system, I think were somewhat of a cool like weekly activity you engaged with, you know, every once in a while, you know, or you know, a couple times a week, get a nice little bonus reward from it, and then that's it. But the problem I think with Islands were because of the rewards they gave and the time it took to complete them, they ended up being your best source of AP. They were the Maw of Souls of, you know, from Legion. They were now the new Maw of Souls in BFA.
Yeah. For some context, as of patch 8.0, you got 250 AP from killing a raid boss, regardless of difficulty. You got it once per week per raid boss, so you didn't get it twice if you went heroic and then did normal. But you got about 250 AP for completing a Mythic Island. Mythic Island, despite the name, was very easy. You could find pugs in trade chat to do them. They took anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes. And... they're a whole lot easier than killing a mythic boss, let me tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think that's the issue. I think that's, I don't know if Islands would have been better, right, in terms of what people thought of them if they weren't tied to AP like this. Yeah. But I know that this killed everybody's experience with Islands.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think Mythic Plus is actually even more egregious if you compare the AP gains, like, over time. With how long it takes you to complete a Mythic Plus instance compared to completing an island, it's still awful. I don't even think you get 200 AP for completing a 15. And you get more than that for completing a Mythic Island. It takes like 5 minutes. Completing a 15, even a short instance with overgeared players, is going to take you at least 15 minutes. Probably more like 20 to 30, depending on which instance you're doing. And especially early on, with the Mythic Plus affix that was in patch 8.0 infested, which made dungeons just take a lot longer in general. It was absolutely awful. But I think honestly the real like death knell for it was the fact that both gave AP made them in competition with each other. Because we wanted AP to feed the Azerite. We needed it in order to unlock our Mythic Azerite traits and even Heroic Azerite traits. So we were in the situation where we wanted to maximize our AP gains. And the fact that islands didn't give gear wasn't really an issue after the first like couple weeks of the patch. It really became about, okay, how can I have this amount of time to spend on the game. How much AP can I get in that amount of time so that I can keep up with everyone? And right. Islands were the most efficient way to do that. Nothing else even came close. Except for clearing the board, so to speak, clearing the map of all of the world quests that gave AP, which was, you know, pretty comparable, but also you ran out of them after, you know, 30 minutes of world quests. So after that point, if you had more time to spend on the game, into the islands you go.
Yeah, and they were, I mean, I thought they were cool the first couple times I did them, just in terms of like kind of racing against other PV or another set of like team or another team that was like a bunch of computer controlled people, right? Or it could be they did have PvP islands, right? So I thought the idea of it was interesting, but yeah, I mean, living in there for at least the early part of the expansion did not make me like islands very much. So
yeah, I know there are people, I know people that actually do like islands and they like them as they are, regardless of the AP component. And I think if there hadn't been this like mandatory AP grind associated with them, if the rewards had just been transmog and pets and mounts, there would have been a much larger audience that would have been like, hey, this is cool. I'll hop in here from time to time and do this as like a break from my normal routine. But because everybody was doing them all the time, nobody really wanted to do them once they stopped needing to.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, that's just, I don't know. It's, again, I think we touched on this earlier about Blizzard building a main system for an expansion and then everything else kind of fits together with that. If the main system isn't great, some of those side systems sort of suck or side content, right? Which I think Island sort of fell into that. The fact that you needed AP to, you know, increase your neck level, at which point then you could unlock better, like the larger rings in your Azerite armor. So it's sort of that sort of cyclical, cyclical cycle, I was going to say, but I guess it could have just said cycle. That cycle of like needing AP to get more like, you know, power in your Azerite armor to then, you know, again, need more AP when you got another piece, right? The mythic piece. So.
Yeah. I guess for those that don't remember how AP worked in patch 8.0 or didn't play during that time, your Azerite armor, every row has a neck level, an Azerite level associated with it that you need to reach to unlock that. Prior to patch 8.2, those levels scaled with the item level of the gear. So you would get your normal gear or your world quest gear, and you would be able to unlock the whole thing. You would get all the traits all the way from top to bottom, including the eye level increase at the bottom. But then you would go and get a heroic piece. And now, instead of being able to get all three traits with your neck level, you could only get the outermost one. Maybe you could get the innermost one on one of your slots as well. And you would go to mythic pieces, and especially the first couple of weeks, if you got lucky and got an Azerite drop from the first week of mythic, you might not be able to unlock any traits at all. It made getting upgrades feel really bad.
I loved having to regrind things when I got a new piece, or my new pieces to be less powerful than my current piece because I couldn't unlock the next ring.
And like I know I ran into people at the time like comparing it to tier sets and things like that, where every patch you had to, you know, grind out your new tier set. But I don't know, that felt a lot different because it wasn't like, for one thing, it was in the new patch. The feels bad of replacing your gear that you worked so hard for is overshadowed by the excitement of a new raid, new content, new gear, new transmog, all that fun stuff. And two, you were getting something new when you grind out a new tier set. You know, you're getting a new effect on your gear, on your character, not grinding more for the same effect you already had, but tuned slightly more powerfully.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I mean, and that just goes into like the Azerite system, which was, I think, we've talked about it, I think, on a couple other podcasts, but like Azerite, honestly, is probably one of the worst centralized systems Wizards ever implemented. And I think I'm being a little, I think I'm being harsh here, but.
I don't think you're being unrealistic, though.
They took away a bunch of things leaving Legion, right? They took away tier sets, they took away legendaries, they took away other certain cool procs, right? Tier sets and legendaries are two big ones we'll focus on here. And Azerite was supposed to replace them. Like, tier sets could be a marked difference in the way you played your class or like your throughput of your class. Like, it's not unsurprising to see tier sets account for like 5 to 10% of your throughput or potentially defensives, right? Like your defensive abilities. And Azerite's never hit that, at least in terms of like certain specs. Like, we talked about, you know, rogue, sub rogues earlier had a very outlier Azerite trait, and it worked on one fight and one fight only. But in general, like, the Azerite system was just not that same sort of powerful system you got, right? And the other thing is, and I think this is sort of on the psychological side of things, which is when you got a new tier set, it was new. Like, the bonus was new. The 2 set, the 4 set, if you remember, the 6 set, the 8 set, like, those things were new each tier, right? And in Azerite, like, we got new Azerite traits, what, twice after launch? Or what?
Some specs got it twice, some specs got it once. It depended on how bad off they were.
Yeah, so I mean, like, correctly. Yeah, so like, the Azerite traits you saw leveling were the same Azerite traits you were going to select when you got your mythic tier piece. Like, it is just, it becomes not interesting or not fun, because at this point you're just looking for the icon to click the right icon as you select your gear. I don't know. I hate Azerite.
And also, like, one of the things that might have made it more salvageable is if when you got to mythic Azerite, you had more control. And like, if you're just using world quest stuff, you would like kind of have to work with what you got. But then when you got to mythic stuff, you know, you could, if you could pick what you want from a bunch of different powerful effects, maybe it would have been better. But
right,
you couldn't. So
yeah, I think we could spend probably an entire show on the issues with Azerite. But I mean, yeah, coming out of, I mean, it was put late into beta, right? There was not a lot of feedback. The feedback that was there was that it was bad.
Yeah,
and that people didn't like it, and then they launched with it anyway. And we'll talk about each patch they tried to make it somewhat better, and I don't think they ever got there.
Yeah,
before they just gave up or like, use whatever you want, guys.
So on that note, let's take a look at 8.1, patch 8.1, the first major patch for Battle for Azeroth, which brought with it a number of things. So we got a new Warfront, Darkshore. I don't think we're going to spend any time on that. We got more war campaign content, we got some more islands, and then we got stuff. What else do we get? The assaults on zones started. Those were a nice AP boost when you completed them. We also got on Azerite the technically it's the fifth ring. For most people, you'll probably think of it as the fourth ring, because the fifth ring on your new Azerite is the eye level increase ring. But we got a new ring added that had spec specific traits only on it, and this was a big change, because before, especially if you're playing like Brewmaster, you never wanted to pick up your spec traits. You always took the generic trait unless it was really bad, because the spec traits just were not very good in comparison. So we spent, you know, all of patch 8.0 using these generic proc effects on all of our Azerite and not interacting with the spec-specific part of the system at all. Adding this new row in a very heavy-handed way fixed that, because now you have a ring that only has spec traits on it. So you have to pick some Azerite traits that are related to your spec.
Yeah, and they also did a revamp too, and added and removed, I think, a bunch of, or not a bunch, but a couple of Azerite traits, right? Like, I know that I think
basically every spec they like removed the worst one, not necessarily in terms of numbers, but in terms of mechanics.
Yep.
And then added a new one to replace it.
Yeah, so I know that like Mistweaver's got Secret Infusion here, which is still, I think, considered our best Azerite trait, right? Or one of the top two.
Right. Brewmasters, we lost. I don't even remember which trait we lost. We got Straight No Chaser, which is a very good trait. It's one of our best traits defensively. You definitely want one copy of it for a lot of content, It's arguable whether you want it now with corruption scaling and all kinds of crazy shenanigans going on. But it's been very good consistently since it was introduced, and definitely a marked improvement over most of our other traits.
Yeah, I don't know. Windwalker's got like Glory of Dawn and Fury's Wind, and then the Dance of Chi-Chi, right, for Spinning Kraken, because I think they made out pretty well too in terms of Azurite traits. But yeah, so they added a bunch of new ones, and then I think on top of all of this, right, all these Azurite changes, they also added like more AP from more sources, right? So we talked a little bit about islands. They added like the weekly bonus to islands now. So if you did, what was it, four islands, or it was four heroics, or
was that
three,
not in six? Patch?
No,
you know,
that was 8.1.
Oh my god!
Yes,
I forgot that.
Yeah, that's why I at least wanted to bring it up. Like, I think 8.1 was the big patch where they did a whole revamp of the AP, like the Azurite power source, like numbers you got. So they sort of fixed that issue of like having to grind out islands, because now, you know, you had your big weekly part of islands.
Is this where emissaries got changed to 3,000 AP instead of 1,800?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So they up to that.
Okay. Yeah, the tuning on Azurite gain was absolutely ridiculous in 8.0, and this was the first step towards fixing it. We also got, this was where we got the Residuum vendor, where you could trade currency that you got from scrapping your Azurite pieces and get a shot, for most practical purposes, get a shot at a random piece of Azurite in a particular slot. Not having this in 8.0, like in 8.0, you could get Azurite from your weekly Mythic Plus cache, but you only got one piece of gear. So if you got something else, you didn't get Azurite that week. And despite Azurite being largely boring and forgettable, there's a very large difference between being stuck with like normal or heroic Azurite and getting max eye level Azurite from your Mythic Plus cache.
Yeah.
It was a little bit insane.
Well, also from a Mythic Plus only player perspective, that was your only source of Azurite, correct? Or could it drop?
Yeah, you could not get it from the Mythic Plus end of dungeon cache, only from the weekly one.
So like, how do they launch that? Be like, I don't know. I'm thinking ahead in 9.1. What vendor is going to be put in?
That was one of those things as well, where like on beta, you got two pieces of gear from your Mythic Plus cache, your weekly cache. One of them was always Azurite.
Yeah,
it was great. And they never said anything, but that did not go live. When it went live, you got one piece of gear from your Mythic Plus cache, and they came out and said, "Oh, the two pieces of gear was just for testing." And it was universal, was like, that was the only reason any of this was acceptable.
Yeah. That's let's not digress, but communication might have been helpful there.
Yeah. But we also got a new raid. We actually got two new raids during the patch 8.1 cycle. Battle for Dazar'alor, which I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on. We've actually talked about quite a few of the bosses in answering questions on previous weeks of the podcast. But then we also got Crucible of Storms, which was kind of the Trial of Valor kind of raid, if you remember that from Legion. It came out kind of between raids, aimed more at the high-end raiding community. It was a two-boss instance and had the hardest mythic boss that has ever been released, I would say. Like, what was it, 700 pulls for the top guild to kill it?
Yeah, and in terms of just, I think, general clear rate too, it's like got the lowest clear rate of any mythic boss.
So very, very hard fight. Had some kind of ridiculous requirements where people were running like an insane number of shamans to abuse Ankh as a way to remove mechanics from the fight. And by the time most guilds cleared it, that actually did clear it, they had hotfixed it to remove that and reduce the requirement for that kind of effect. But yeah, it was a cool raid. I did it on heroic. Didn't really clear it on mythic, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's the home of one of my favorite bosses from this expansion, Cabal. But yeah, no, I think we only killed Cabal on mythic before, you know, 8.2 came out in my guild. But I don't particularly like this idea from Blizzard, right? Like, I don't know how you feel about like interim raids, right? Like the Trial of Valors, there's like, if you think back, like Helya was one of these, or was it Helya?
Helya. It was Helya. I'm of two minds about it. On the one hand, I like it, because having this thing that's aimed at strictly like the high-end community is like a cool thing. They can do a lot of really interesting stuff there that they don't necessarily want in a regular old raid instance. But then at the same time, the content is trivialized the very next patch, which means if you actually want to do it, you've got like a 3-month window at most where you can actually do the content. And that's not a lot of time for an instance that's tuned to be as hard as this one was.
Right.
And as soon as the patch drops, it's all irrelevant. Like, you can go back, but nobody cares and nobody wants to, and none of the gear is good and you don't get achievements for it anymore. And it's like, why even bother? If they did something where it would kind of scale your eye level to a particular point, kind of like how they did with challenge mode instances back in WoD, that could be cool, where like you couldn't overgear the instance and we would still have things like, you know, corruption would have completely broken it in half, but it would have been at least better than how it ended up playing out. Like, I would have loved to get a chance to do Unat. Unat was purportedly like the best tank fight this expansion, which isn't saying a whole lot, but I would have liked to do it and I didn't get to.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know if this was actually, was it announced like with 8.1? I forget how this one came about, because I felt like this was like one of those things that sort of was a surprise to the community in terms of like, oh, we're getting another raid with more bosses this sort of patch cycle.
Yeah, I don't think it was announced with 8.1. I think it was announced partway through.
Yeah, which I don't like, because like in a guild, like, so I generally raid in guilds that raid, you know, between 2 and 3 days a week. So like, we were still working through Jaina. We didn't have sort of BOD on like lock, like one night clears at the point that Crucible launched, but we still wanted to go in and try and see if we could do it, right? And I think it puts a lot of stress on like wanting to make sure you keep clearing and getting people gear, like in this point, like mounts, right, that they want. But then also saying like, hey, we need to progress this 2-boss raid instance that really doesn't have a lot of cool, as interesting gear, maybe not usable gear in it, but interesting gear, all before 8.2. I don't know.
Yeah, that was another thing too. Like, actually, that instance, Crucible of Storms, had some very cool gear. It had probably the best tank trinket all expansion. And it was usable for all of like a month and a half.
Yeah.
It was great. I loved the like 6 to 8 weeks that I got to spend using the Idol of Indiscriminate Consumption. That's it. Idol of Indiscriminate Consumption. And after that, it was irrelevant. And I've ended it. Feels bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like something like this works better if they pre-announce it and put like a start date on it, like at the start of a tier. So as a guild, you know, like, all right, we have to be this far through, like we'll be this far through the instance, the main instance, and then we have this like secondary thing to get through. So I don't know.
Yeah, if I can make a reference to the F game. So in Final Fantasy, they have this kind of structure where there are what they call savage raids, which are not exactly equivalent to mythic raids, but same general ballpark, maybe a little bit easier. From a lot of people's perspectives. And then they have what they call ultimate fights, which are a lot closer to what Crucible of Storms was. And ultimate fights are set up in such a way that you can in limited ways overgear them, but not to the degree that we could overgear Crucible of Storms. And it would have been, That's kind of where I'm coming from, of like, I kind of like that idea. I would like to have this kind of ultimate fight where we had, you know, 6 months of farm on Nyalotha. If we could go back to Crucible of Storms and not have it be completely trivial and get to be like, hey, let's go do Unat. Let's go progress Unat after we've been farming Nyalotha for 4 months. That sounds cool. I'll do that.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, it was definitely a difficult raid. I wish it was better position in terms of like timing.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're kind of both complaining about the same thing in different ways.
Yeah, definitely. So that was, I mean, that was most of 8.1. I think the only thing we didn't really touch on is the new Mythic Plus affix, which I don't even think we talked about the original one.
Yeah, so let's really briefly, like, the original one for those that were playing was infested. Different mobs throughout the instance had a infestation on them that healed other allies around them. So you needed to either CC them so you could kill them individually or focus them down so you could kill the rest of the pack. For most pugs, that meant you focused down the infested one. When they died, they spawned a couple of adds that you needed to stun immediately, or they would infest another mob and then kill them before the stun wore off, which it was surprisingly easy to basically make an instance uncompletable in yes. Patch 8.0, because the way it worked is when there were two infested mobs in a pack, if they were both originally infested, they didn't heal each other, so you could actually kill them. But if one was original and one was infested by another mob dying, then they would heal each other, and they healed a massive amount every second. And it became practically impossible to actually kill that pack. So if you needed to kill that pack in order to complete the instance, sucks to be you.
You're screwed. Infested was not fun.
It was not fun. It introduced, like, a lot of people, like, say they missed the period of time in Burning Crusade when you had to CC in order to kill, like, dungeons. But for one thing, that was not a requirement when you had actual raid gear for most instances, and also just doesn't work with the kind of AoE that we have in the game right now. That's not how classes are designed.
It's like the passive AoE that pretty much every class has.
Yeah. Like, I definitely broke quite a few CCs, especially, oh my god, do you remember Laser Matrix?
Oh, yeah.
That was one of our Azerite traits. That was the BIS Brewmaster Azerite trait in patch 8.0. And also, it would break CC indiscriminately. It would pull things you weren't in combat with. It was an absolute nightmare in Mythic Plus. So I definitely broke a whole lot of CC on accident like that. And it just ripped keys all over the place.
Yeah.
But in Season 2, we got a much better seasonal affix. Reaping, which I think is probably a lot of people's, like, second favorite affix of the expansion. Reaping, as you killed things in the instance, you kind of built up this... Well, as you progress through, like, your trash percent at 33%, 66%, and 100%, you would spawn a reaping wave. And, well, the way you dealt with a reaping wave is you just started blasting. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It was fun to basically, like, route through a dungeon to make sure you trigger reaping at certain points so that you had enough time, like, you trigger it, like, when either you have cooldowns ready or after, you know, after killing a particularly tough pack, right? You get all those reaping mobs, group them up, AoE everything down, like, DPS loved it. But yeah, reaping was fun. I mean, there was a lot of interesting things you could do, like the high-end pushers, right, where they'd basically get all their trash percentage but a single mob, kill the last boss, and then kill the mob to complete their trash percentage. They wouldn't have to do the final reaping, which I think sped a bunch of stuff up.
And this was the first time that we really saw Shadow Meld in the limelight, because Shadow Meld allows you to drop combat, and if you did it at particular points, you could have the entire reaping wave reset. And as long as you didn't die, if you died, this didn't work. So it was strictly like an MDI strat, a very high key strat, where you're assuming people aren't going to die or like a full party wipe. Then you could just skip the wave. And it was a huge time save that was basically never relevant to your average player, because you needed 5 Night Elves or a mix of Night Elves and Rogues to make it work. But that was the first time I think we really saw Shadow Meld be particularly powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was interesting affix. I think the only other thing we didn't touch on before we moved to A2 was just the portal rooms were added in this patch, which I love. I think they look cool. I think it was a cool idea to, like, consolidate it all. So
this is actually one where, again, if I can remark on the fact that communication would have been great, because initially what happened is they removed a bunch of portals and added a couple of portals to these portal rooms that were in Stormwind and Orgrimmar. But it was, like, woefully incomplete. It did not cover the breadth of things that were in the original portals in Dalaran. And so then they came back and said, okay, well, we screwed up. Here's the rest of the portals. And at that point, it was actually pretty cool. Like, okay, it's still maybe a little bit annoying that I have to go through an extra loading screen while I use my Dalaran Hearthstone. So I go Dalaran to Orgrimmar and then take a portal from Orgrimmar. But at the same time, like, it actually worked out pretty well once they actually got all the portals in.
Yeah, I enjoyed the layout. Like, at least in Orgrimmar, they have the ability to expand, like, in the secondary, like, location underneath. So
it's cool. And there's some off to the side too.
Oh, is there?
Mm-hmm. I actually don't know if we're talking about the same thing, because it's off to the side. I think it's down some stairs. There might be some also room that's up some stairs.
No, I'm thinking downstairs. It's like, okay, you go down the hallway towards the exit. If you go to the door on the right, there's like stairs that go down. There's only one portal down there. And I forget where it takes you to. But
that was patch 8.1. We do have a couple of questions. We're not going to get to all of our questions today because the episode is already going really long. We are at 2.5 hours already. I don't know if it's getting edited down.
Nice.
But yeah, we do have a couple of questions that I think we should get to. And then that'll be it for today's episode.
Awesome. All right. So I think, since this is my section, I didn't realize the segue. It's been a while. all right. So first up, we have a question from Iron, who asked, do you think that making/having a weak aura that shows the size of your next celestial brew would be valuable for mythic progression?
Yes and no. So for the most of the time, no. It's interesting, but it's just going to be noise on your screen. And it's not particularly valuable for you to know. It is somewhat valuable to know whether you have the shield and how much damage you have left on the shield before it expires, but not how big the next one is going to be. The one exception might be Huntsman Altamore, or whatever his name is, which has the mechanic that spawns an add with missing HP based on your health when you get hit. And so for that fight in particular, it might be valuable to have a weak aura that tells you if your Celestial Brew will be big enough to be at 100% health after the hit. But outside of that, I don't think that weak aura will be very useful. Will it be interesting? Absolutely. In the same way that the tank effective health weak aura was this expansion. But will it be useful in the fight? Probably not.
I use that weak aura. It saved my life like twice.
I love that plus. It's really cool. I turned it off though.
Yeah, I don't care anymore. Awesome. All right. Our next question then comes from Waif Brew. Am I saying that right?
Waif Brew, I think.
Waif Brew. I think it's supposed to be like waifu, but Waif Brew.
Waif Brew. Anyway. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe that's what I'm going with. So Waif Brew. We'll call him Waif Brew or her Waif Brew. They ask, what are your thoughts on the state of tanks pre-BFA and post-BFA?
Okay, so I'm going to give you a non-answer for this. I included it because I actually thought it was interesting, especially since we are putting a moratorium on BFA talk.
Yeah.
At some point, we'll revisit this in more detail. We could spend a whole episode talking about design of tanks in BFA as compared to before. But there's a couple reasons that I am not totally going to give you an answer right now. First is that the answer would be very long. And this is already a long episode. Second is I have very limited tanking experience pre-BFA. I tanked starting in Nighthold at the heroic level, moved up to the CE level during Antorus, and then BFA happened. And I can talk pretty effectively about the differences in tank design from Legion going into BFA, but there are differences between that design and the design in Warlords of Draenor and Mists of Pandaria that I can talk about at an abstract level, but didn't actually play. So I can't really comment on how they were in practice. At a high level, like very high level, going into BFA, they made a very deliberate effort to reduce the agency that tanks have over their own survivability. Ostensibly, this is for a couple of reasons, like making sure the healers actually play a role in keeping tanks alive.
Buffing Mistweaver, of course.
That's always been something like all tanks have required healer attention, even in Legion, except for the notable outlier of blood decay, which that's their whole thing is self-healing. So it's understandable that they would be the ones to break that mold. There is like an honorable mention of Vengeance Demon Hunter that could do crazy shenanigans in Mythic Plus. But in raids, they still required healer attention in all but the most absurd scenarios. So that doesn't really hold up in practice as a big difference in how things played out in Legion versus BFA. What it did do is it meant that you wouldn't spend a whole lot of time wiping because your tank couldn't use active mitigation, right? Unless your tank was a warrior, in which case you would wipe a lot because warriors really depended on having shield block up. It led to things like the fetid log that I wrote that post in Uldir, where basically the moral of the story is there wasn't really a functional difference between using your AM well and not using it well as a brewmaster, and that's continued to be a trend, and it's looking like it's probably going to pan out that way in Shadowlands as well, with some caveats, because Celestial Brew and the changes to Purifying Brew that happened this week have opened things up, and we haven't quite figured out exactly how that is going to work yet.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I always like squishy tanks because it gives Mistweaver something to heal, at least for the first tier.
The thing about squishy tanks, though, is that the beacon is just better for that. I'm not hating on Mistweaver, but beacon is really dumb as far as tank healing goes. Like, every time we're on farm at this point, so most things were under healing, and I can absolutely tell when we don't have a Holy Paladin in the raid because the beacon's gone.
Well, okay, so first of all, of course you can, because Paladin, like, Holy Paladin is just overpowered as hell right now.
Well, no, it's right? Not even that. It's like, if I look at the... So, I might get the same, like, total healing over the course of a fight with and without a Holy Paladin. I might personally get that. But when there's other healers, there's gaps, you know? There's gaps where they're having to heal the raid and not me.
Yeah, that's okay.
When there's a Holy Paladin, they're always healing me and also the raid. Because beacon exists.
They're so dumb, man. They should just delete that class.
Honestly, I'm really unhappy with the design of tanks in BFA. And some things are getting better in Shadowlands, but not nearly as much as we hoped.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that I haven't tanked much, but I've always played a monk, so I've always had at least the ability to tank, and I've done it at least slightly in every expansion, right? And you probably, I mean, MOP largely is probably considered one of the best times for tanks, with Vengeance being a thing, although it did spawn some really degenerate activities by those guys. But yeah, I mean, I think I can understand the idea of needing to balance being potentially self-sufficient or sort of in charge of your own destiny while also not making it making tanks sort of super self-sustainable, meaning they could, you know, any damage you take or any damage you take you have, you can cover with your own abilities.
Yeah, and there's a definitely a balance to be had there, but I think it's really important for the Blizzard designers to keep in mind that it doesn't matter if tanks are balanced, if all of them feel like what you do doesn't matter.
Yeah.
There's nothing, so Aggramar really stands out to me as a fight in Antorus where it really, really mattered how well I played, how well I used my AM, because it wasn't that there was any one ability that you just had to use your AM after it and or before it or however your class worked and you were fine. The damage intake over the course of the fight was so high that if you played poorly, you would run out of mitigation and die. So it really rewarded you for being able to consistently like have tight execution on your mitigation over the course of like this 6 to 8 minute fight. There's nothing that happened like that in BFA at all. Nothing even close. Not even in the same universe as that. That rewarded you for a really tight play. So yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing I would like to get back to. I don't even care, like, tanks needed a lot of healing on Aggramar. The boss hit really hard, but it also mattered a lot that the tanks played well. And that's what I want to have back.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay. And I think that about does it for questions this week. I know that we have recorded basically our full BFA retrospective, but I think we're actually going to end up splitting this up. So we of course today will have talked about BFA launch and 8.1. And next week we will kind of release the rest of our thoughts on 8.2 and 8.3. But yeah, I think Emelson, this is what, one of the longest episodes we talked about that we've done.
Yeah, we sat here when we were talking through everything, and with everything that we had in this episode, it was going to be 2 hours and 40 minutes long, even with a little bit of editing. And that's really long.
Yeah, way too long, I think, for what we wanted this podcast to be. So yeah, just for full transparency, you're getting at least half the episode this week, and you'll get the other half next week. But we'll, of course, sort of record, a new set of, what's been happening over the week. So that'll be up to date. We'll get you a new set of questions out and answered. But yeah, I think that's it. So thanks for listening to this one. I know, Emelson, you want to do your little send us away?
Yeah. That about wraps it up. But if you enjoyed this podcast and you want to support it and all the other work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, whether it's guides or Discord work or theory crafting or this podcast, you can do that over at Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. As always, we really appreciate your support, whether it's financial or just, coming and hanging out in Discord. So thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.